I thought I'd remove that.
It was useful.
Yeah, but I was slightly worried about it. I was also trying to... I own the sort of longevityactually.co.uk domain, and I was trying to get that email to redirect to my... And it wouldn't work. Oh, I don't have time to sort this out. I mean, presumably... was already owned by someone.
Okay, start. Good evening, everyone. My name is Jonathan Bordley. I'm the Honorary Secretary for SIAS, and welcome to this evening's programme event. Just before I begin tonight's talk, I've got a couple of notices about upcoming SIAS events. So on the 22nd of November, we've got our 82nd annual SIAS dinner. This, like every year, is sold out, but it's been held at the Bankside Ballroom, and if any of you have got tickets, we're looking forward to seeing you all there. Our next programme event is going to be on Tuesday, the 3rd of December, and this talk aims to explain why discount rates are flawed. I'm sure it'll be quite an interesting and topical programme event. Further details about the event and exactly what it's going to be covering and online registration are available on SIAS's website. And next, I've just got a few standard notices about tonight's event. So tonight's event's hosted by SIAS. We do encourage you, those of you who are not SIAS members, to sign up. SIAS membership is extremely good value at £26 for a fellow for the year and £15 for IFOA students. Again, further details of how to sign up are available on our website. There is an attendance sheet in the hall. If you didn't sign it when you come in, please remember to do so when you leave. Attendance at these talks is not actually automatically recorded on your CPD log on the IFOA website, so please remember to do that in the usual way if you haven't done so. We're eager for our talks to run as smoothly and effectively as possible, and we're always happy to hear any feedback you have. So after tonight's event, you will be emailed a short feedback questionnaire. Please feel free to fill that in and give any comments as honestly as you like. We're only here to make these events for you, and we'd like to make them as good as possible. If there is a fire alarm during the meeting, it's not a test, so the exits are at the back on the left and the right there. And then just finally, a quick reminder to set your phones to silent. Tonight's talk is going to last around 1 hour and is going to be followed by a Q&A session. And if you do have any questions, please just raise your hand and someone will come around with a microphone so that we can all hear you. We do value everyone's contributions at our talk, so right here I do have a bottle of champagne on offer for both the best question from an IFOA student and a best question from the IFOA, from an IFOA fellow. So when you do, if you do ask a question, please remember to state your name and your status so we can record that for the best winner. Following the meeting, there will be sandwiches and networking just held in the small room where you registered, so please do feel free to join us if you would like to. Now, back to tonight's talk. We've got Sasha Damarney, and he's the chair of the Mortality Research Steering Committee. He's a longevity actuary with over 10 years' experience in this area, working across most areas of longevity, so direct and bulk annuities, underwritten and standard annuities, and for both insurers and reinsurers. He's currently the head of longevity at Prudential and author of the prize-winning science paper, The Nature of Longevity Risk. We've also got Matthew Edwards, and he's a director in the life practice of Wallace Towers Watson with responsibility for demographic risk and analytics. He's the deputy chair of the CMI and a member of the Mortality Research Steering Committee, where he's particularly involved with Longevity Bulletin. He was chair of the profession's Antibiotic Resistance Working Party, which has recently published its report on models. So I'll pass over to Matthew and Sasha and their colleagues.
Thank you very much, and good evening. First of all, thank you all for coming. I appreciate there are effigies you could potentially be burning or terrorist acts you could be commemorating, so I appreciate so many of you coming here this evening. I'd like to begin by thanking SIAS for enabling us to come here and talk to you about the Mortality Research Steering Committee. As much as we hope this is going to be of interest to you, it's quite important for us in terms of the programme of what we're doing to reach out to you guys and tell you what we're thinking and gain that feedback. But before we get started, I'm going to try and get some energy in the room. So can I ask everyone to stand up? Okay. All right. What I'm looking to do is get some sense of where everyone's at in terms of understanding and desire from the session, in addition to it being, well, according to this, 6:30, but 6 o'clock in the evening, and everyone's sort of probably wind down. I appreciate some people have been sitting for a while. So what I'd like you to do is sit down if you've never heard of the MRSC and are beginning to think you've come to the wrong event. We should at this point look in this direction, so that's slightly worrying. Okay, I'd imagine that there are some of you that whilst having heard of the MRSC are still starting from a relatively low base and are looking to learn quite a bit from tonight. So if that's the case, sit down. Everyone else, stay standing. Okay, so we've got a few people who've got a good understanding of what's going on, and you're probably looking to gain an understanding of where we're at and what we're trying to do. So that's great. Now, the last group I'd like to identify are those people that have a really strong interest in the MRSC and already know they want to get involved in some of the exciting stuff that we are planning to do. So if that doesn't apply to you, you can sit down. Excellent. Right, we have one. Right, good. We contact this guy at the end of the session. We've got one volunteer. Now, I hope by the end of the session I can infuse a few more people, but we've got one, so that's good. That's a start. All right, okay. Now, apparently I need to give some kind of disclaimer that apparently Matthew and I will not be saying anything that relates to SIAS or on behalf of our respective sources of remuneration. Do I need to say any more on this, or does that cover it? Excellent, good. Disclaimer out there, please don't sue us for anything, and certainly don't contact our employers or anything. I'm on paternity, so they probably don't even know I'm here, so you know, just keep that quiet and amongst yourselves. Okay, so we've got that out of the way. So what are we intending to talk about tonight? We want to begin by explaining what the MRSC is and give you a summary of what we do. And I'm going to hand over to Matthew shortly, and he's going to talk through that. I then want to drill into one particular aspect of what we do in more detail, specifically the priority areas of demographic research that we have identified and we're recommending that the profession focuses its efforts on. And lastly, I want to talk to you about how you guys can get involved. There are a number of interesting ways, and I'm going to keep coming back to this topic time and time again, because I really think there's a lot of stuff that we want to do that's really exciting and interesting, and I want you to get involved. Okay, I shall now hand over to Matthew, and he'll tell you what the MRSC is.
Great, thanks. As invited to do a talk in Helsinki about a year ago on it was genetics actually, which was quite fun. And then just when I was going up to the podium to give my talk, it transpired that they'd already sat through two other things in Finnish, I presume. So my host waved me to sit back down, and some sort of aerobics instructor came in onto the stage and led everybody through 5 minutes worth of squats and jumping around and stuff like that. So unlike Sasha, I'm not going to make you do that. It was quite amusing. Actually, then at the end of my session, it was even more strange because four guys got up, and these were sort of actuaries, and they sort of went off into sort of two very amusing, if you could understand Finnish, I was told they were very amusing, two very amusing sets of sort of Finnish actuarial folk songs, which if you've not heard those, you've not lived. Anyway, something else we might be able to look forward to if we manage to do some impromptu MRSC folk singing. So what is the MRSC? So Mortality Research Steering Committee. And I'm going to sort of take you through where we arose from, what we've been doing, what we are doing. But the main theme of this, hopefully you've got the vibe ready from Sasha, is not for the sake of us just running through some slides and trying to impart some information, because that'd be pretty boring for you and pretty boring for us. It's very much to try and say, this is what we're doing, have been doing, what we are doing, what we're intending to be doing, with a view to getting your thoughts on how we could be doing things differently, what other things we should be doing, and very much try and make it two-way. So there's a lot less than an hour of us speaking, and hopefully a lot more, at least half of that will be the Q&A, the interactions afterwards. And we're very, very keen to get your ideas on what sort of things we should be doing better or differently, or getting more volunteers and trying to think of some other sort of setting up a standing down routine to sort of confuse other people into remaining standing when the music stops and so on. So we say bad luck with that one. So what is the MRSC? So established back in 2006, a group of actuaries and professionals from other disciplines, and the very important thing for us is this aspect of getting in people from other disciplines. We'll sort of talk about some examples of that as we go through some of the slides, aiming to advance mortality research through interaction and collaboration. And obviously, for the sake of sort of keeping the acronym short, we had sort of M for mortality in the MRSC, but it's much more than mortality, and pretty much throughout this we'll see a sort of triplet or trinity of words: mortality, morbidity, longevity. So we are sort of covering all of those different aspects. So if you're sort of a protection critical illness type actuary, we're not focused purely on your stuff. We are trying to cover everything of relevance to that sort of demographic risk area. So the purpose in fairly sort of broad themes here, the three bullet points at the bottom, is contributing towards the IFOA being seen as a sort of thought leader in those areas. Again, the sort of three words: mortality, morbidity, longevity. To support the Research and Thought Leadership Committee, which is whom we sort of sit underneath, with their sort of objectives. And the bottom one is to provide a forum for raising sort of interesting research and stuff around those themes. So those all sound sort of fairly good and rather generic and broad. So the next slide tries to, well, in a couple of slides time, we'll try and drill down a bit into exactly what that entails, or how we see it as rolling out. And you obviously very much value your own thoughts as to what we could be doing to promote those objectives. So a question we get asked a lot is, given all that sort of stuff, then how do we sort of interact or not interact with the CMI? And as you might remember from the intro, I'm sort of got a slight sort of schizophrenic act here, because I'm also sort of half MRSC, half CMI. So I'll sort of do my schizophrenic impression. I shouldn't say such things, it's probably politically incorrect. And move on to the next slide. So the basic concept is, in the whole sort of universe of mortality, longevity stuff, MRSC and CMI tries to sort of cover everything that could be covered in that whole universe. And we're splitting it up in this sort of way, which hopefully is clear to some of you, and hopefully will become more clear as the talk goes on. If you sort of start off on the right, where things are probably easier to define, it's very much providing practical tools, whether tables or the MPC's output of the projection model, focusing on what we might deem to be more objective sort of perspective on reality, concerned more with taking data that's out there, or in the case of a CMI, sort of collecting the data as well from the life officers and so on, using that data, using established techniques. That's all, you need to sort of try and think of a sort of polite word for boring, because obviously I won't say it's boring, because it's not, but it's you might see it on that end of the spectrum. Whereas the MRSC is doing more what you might call sort of blue sky stuff, trying to sort of think through what are the sort of things that may be coming along to affect mortality, morbidity, longevity in the next few years. What are some new ways we can consider to measure it or define it or whatever, as you'll see from some of the new slides, and really more of a blue skies sort of approach. So hopefully that clarifies to some extent the split there. So certainly within the CMI and within MRSC, we sort of think we've got a reasonably well-defined split, and we've had a pretty good coordination for some time now, so I'm sort of hopefully representing sort of coordination as opposed to confusion in terms of sitting on both. I think 2 chairs ago, the chair of the MRSC was Peter Banthorpe, who was on the exec, so we've had a reasonable amount of relationship and got some sort of more formal sessions going forward to make sure we're sort of well coordinated. So there you go. So who are the MRSC? So you're seeing 4 of us at the moment, so it's me and Sasha and 2 other guys here. So Charles King is the next. You've not got a nameplate yet. None of us have names. You must have some sort of staff number or something. So Charles King, sort of PacLife3, so the head of pricing there, or pricing director, and further along, Stephen Baxter, so longevity lead at Hyman's, who are very good to come along and share the pain. But you'll see from the list, we've got a very nice spread, I think, of people from consultancies, reinsurers, direct insurers, academics, so a wide range of both people and institutions, and hopefully many of the names you'll recognise as being sort of longevity leaders in the profession. And you've also got Sarah Matteson, who's head of the research, or head of research at the IFR, and she's actually very valuable in terms of contributing ideas and helping us to sort of have the correct interactions and navigation within the profession. So a good chunk of people there. And one of the things which I think you mentioned, Sasha, was this idea of creating a member interest group whereby we can get more people to contribute more towards us without necessarily having to sort of be on the MRSC and have the time commitment there, but trying to find a more sort of like flexible working way of allowing people to contribute without being formally on that list and being press ganged into sitting on the wrong side of the table and so on. So mission statement. So we sort of talked in sort of fairly broad terms before about these sort of fluffy research type objectives in a general sense, and these are the much more specific things we've come up with over the last 6 months or so. So two main areas here. One is sort of leading, creating world-class research in various areas, top half and bottom below, providing a conduit for research activity through various avenues. So the top half, things such as helping to think through better ways of predicting future improvements, better ways perhaps to think about portfolio analyses, Sasha will be going through those in more detail, so I won't sort of steal the thunder there, but you can see some fairly sort of concrete steps there, concrete ambitions. The bottom half is maybe feels slightly more generic. It's more about different ways we can help to disseminate what we're doing or create more sort of interaction and so on. So two slightly different flavors there. So those basically spell out our ambitions in a slightly more concrete way than the previous slide. So conduit for research, what does that mean? I think maybe another quite good way of getting some more volunteers would be if you don't know the precise name for that precise geometric shape, then you should be on the MIG and be volunteering to do lots of stuff for us. If anyone's got a good name for the shape, who knows? So the interesting thing there, though, is if it, despite the weird shape, is that one of your inventions, Sasha, or is that not an official Mendelian shape or something? Is the four dimensions there of contribution at the top, dissemination on the right, guidance at the bottom, and relationships on the left. So if you think about guidance, starting with contribution at the top, having to contribute in some way as much as we can towards the profession, towards policymakers. So, for instance, the profession occasionally gets asked to provide some sort of policy statement or evidence to parliamentary committees or whatever, which gives us a way, if it affects our particular, product, to sort of step in there and contribute towards that end. On the right, there's dissemination, and I'll go through some of these in more detail, but things such as the longevity bulletin or events having to disseminate what we're doing. At the bottom, guidance. So ARC, and hopefully many of you will be familiar with the ARC, so the Actuarial Research Centre, which Andrew Cairns is heavily involved with, and I only sort of had a brainwave at an ARC event last week, and I realised if Andrew Cairns' middle initial was R, then it would be actually perfect, which explains why he's always at these ARC events. I don't need to quiz him about that. So we're also providing guidance in the sense that for the ARC things that have some sort of mortality, longevity connection, we sort of sit on the steering committee of those. So I'm on the steering committee for the big health, actuarial data, actuarial science type commission. That's been, I think, very useful. Well, hopefully it's been useful for the committee, that for that ARC works to try and sort of steer it towards more useful outputs for actuaries and less away from some of the things it might otherwise have been doing. So sort of trying to provide guidance there, and working parties. So the working party, which was mentioned before, the antibiotic resistance got sort of formed through conversations at the MRSC, although the MRSC isn't sort of allowed, due to the governance, to own its own working parties, so we then have to spawn them off to go and get owned somewhere else. And on the left-hand, relationships. So relationships with, depending on how good your asset is, sort of international bodies such as the IAA, the International Actuarial Association. So we've had some quite good relationships there through Brian Ridsdale, who's sort of lined up one of us to be on the drivers of mortality paper, which is near finalisation. The bottom left one is very interesting. So heads of sort of longevity, morbidity, mortality sort of thing at all the main insurers, reinsurers, consultancies. So last week, me and Sasha organised a very, very good meeting with getting on for 40 or so people who are basically the heads of those areas in the various respective firms, and had a very good session getting their views on how we should be approaching some of these research priorities, how we should prioritise them, and lots of other interesting things. So we're sort of trying to do lots of different things here, and hopefully we can be doing some of these better, but this is the sort of way we're trying to operate. So what do we produce? What are the most concrete things? And longevity bulletin, I'll go through these in the next few slides, longevity bulletin, the mortality longevity symposium, in theory, various ad hoc events, and again, we can get your feedback on what sort of events would be useful. And there's a sort of mortality hub page on the website, which contains various things, such as longevity bulletin and other things, and that's the sort of thing we're trying to get more population to be of more use to you as sort of mortality stakeholders. The key question there is though, what else should it produce? And as I said at the beginning, we're trying to be more interactive here. It's not for me to stand here and reel off stuff. It's actually trying to prompt questions. I mean, the idea for us is that every slide you're saying, I've got a good idea, let's fire that idea away and bring it out at the Q&A. And maybe we could try and persuade some of the champagne to go towards the best idea contribution as well as the best question, or you could cunningly phrase your idea contribution as a question by putting a question mark at the end. Shouldn't you be doing such and such? So, longevity bulletin, so three of the nicest covers of the last couple of years. So the one on the left was ABR, which was a great issue, a very nice graphic. The one on the middle is the tide turning for longevity? And it probably is for those people going out of control down the roller coaster. And if you'd like to see people going out of control on roller coasters, and apparently the task for tomorrow's episode of The Apprentice is going to be designing a roller coaster, so they're all going to be, if they don't get all killed, they'll all be fired or something like that, so that'll be good fun. We don't normally do commercial plugs. And big data and health, so just a nice range, and hopefully with the longevity bulletin, we've managed to go through a very, very broad, decent range of stuff, which is sort of, if you like, up and coming issues, and we have quite a lot of conversation in the MRSC about what should the next issue be, and clearly, one of the things would be good to have here tonight would be some more issues, like more ideas for future issues. To give you a sneak peek of what we're working on at the moment, it's going to have a sort of big pharma theme. The diagram up top left is very interesting because I was just did the usual thing of looking for sort of a fun image on Google Images, which is quite nice, mainly because it's got hexagons, which has always been my favourite shape. I have to ask the psychologist about that. But then transpired actually in an article about how pharmaceutical companies sort of contribute disproportionately to the whole climate change of greenhouse gas emissions, which is an interesting concept there as where their sort of greater greenhouse gas controls will have some sort of interesting adverse impact on pharmaceutical production. Who knows? Anyway, so overall pharmacy, insights into how pharmaceuticals could be helping or hindering what's happening in morbidity and mortality. So we've got some currently lined up and some of them already in the bag. Very, very interesting article on polypharmacy by a guy who's very good value, so he's rather hoping he'd get paid for it. But I said we wouldn't pay him, but we would advertise his books. So he's got some very good books you can find on Amazon. So Malcolm Kendricks does a very good book called Doctoring Data, which is quite a nice one from an actuarial perspective of how pharmaceutical companies can go about and happily doctor their data. The basic concept is you do 20 different tests, one of which is going to be significant to the 1 in 20 level, that sort of obvious thing. Statin, so output from the ARC research party, very hopefully an interesting thing from diabetes, on diabetes from Nicola, who's sort of head of the diabetes working party, and trying to get two angles there. One is the extent to which pharma could actually help manage diabetes, so good luck with that. And the other one is the extent to which pharma is actually exacerbating the problem, so there's quite a lot of evidence that the sort of proliferation of statins is actually sort of creating half the diabetes problem, as you might expect, as it's sort of basically statins are designed to stop the human body doing what it should be doing. Don't get carried away. Researching research, so me and Dan Ryan doing this, the point there is trying to sort of think through, if you're reading a research paper, then how can you actually interpret whether it's actually any meaning in it, and what are the different types of evidence? There's far more evidence than just the standard sort of epidemiological research. Article on UK opioids, so you've all heard about the US opioid crisis, and things in the UK are going a bit in that direction, although not quite so bad, and probably some more fluff about ABR. So lots of good stuff there, but again, very interested in getting your ideas about what good things you could be doing next year after that, and so on and so forth. So all good stuff. So events. So the big thing we've always been doing sort of every other year is what we've called the International Mortality and Longevity Symposium. Nice fun cover there we did from the, sort of the debrief brochure from the previous big event. So this year, as I'm sure many of you are aware, we sort of had it all designed, as it were, and then there's a lack of numbers, so we sort of redesigned it. I thought the IFO did a very good job, actually, at the last minute, trying to sort of work out a nice workaround whereby we sort of had lots of webinar type events, so you got sort of some of the fun without the best part, which is always the networking. So it was going to be sort of trying to see what we can do in that dimension again in a couple of years' time. But we've also been doing smaller ad hoc meetings. So the last one was around about 3 years ago, or it's 3 years and 20 minutes ago, if you want to be precise. So we had an evening on ABR here. Since you've got good eyesight, you can just recognise some of the people on the podium there. So the middle one was Joseph Liu, who was the previous chair. And that's very useful, actually. I think, well, hopefully the audience found it useful. It then sort of spurred all the activity that ended with the ABR working party. So again, there's another question is, you know, what other sort of ad hoc events might you find useful to have? What would be formats? Would webinars be good? And lots of interesting sort of things there we'd sort of welcome your ideas on, because it'd be going to be good to be doing more than just a big event every 2 years, which might obviously be at risk of numbers and logistics. And that's that. So back to somebody who knows what they're talking about.
Okay, thank you, Matthew. Someone knows what he's talking about. That's rather optimistic. Okay, as Matthew's outlined, one of the main purposes of the MRSC is to steer the profession in terms of where it's putting its effort from research. And over the last year, we have been reviewing what we think should be those priorities. And we've come up with concluded that there should be six. In terms of what these six priorities are, we've been working on four principles, or walking to four principles, and I just want to sort of explain what they are, because they're quite important in terms of justifying why we think these are the right six. So, firstly, we want to address real challenges. We want to focus on issues that are of substance, rather than just turning the handle or limiting our ambition to what we know can be done. We want the results of what the profession is putting its energy into to make a meaningful difference to how demographic risks are managed. And so, in essence, we want to knock the so what question completely out of the park. We want it to be obvious why we're doing it. We go, oh, yes, that's a big challenge. We can see why you're doing that. So to that extent, if we're going to be ambitious to try and achieve things of real value, we're going to take a few risks, and we're quite prepared to fail. This isn't about us saying we're going to definitely get these six done. We're going to have a go at these six. We're going to put energy into them. But we might not be able to succeed. And that way, at least we know we're trying the right things. We would rather fail trying to do something of value rather than succeed in delivering something that really doesn't take actual science any further forward. So secondly, in that vein, we want to work on sort of next generation solutions, you know, borrowing something, I don't know, from the IT anyway. We don't want to just consolidate what you guys are doing now. We don't want to repeat what you guys are doing now. We want to go beyond that. You know, in our view, if you're already doing it, there's limited value in us duplicating it. So we want to go beyond what is the current best practice and build the next best practice of the things that will be used, you know, over the next decade. Yes. Okay. So, because we're working at the professional level as the MRSC, there are certain things that are best done by the profession rather than individual actuaries. Either they cannot be done by individual actuaries, or they need the profession or the industry to provide the credibility to achieve their intent. Now, I'm going to use the example of longevity risk management we're going to come on to later and explain that one in a bit more detail. Lastly, we want to make sure our research and the research we want to see done is enhancing the profession's reputation. If we want to be recognized as a thought leader, then the profession needs to be a thought leader. You know, we need the research to be of note above and beyond what we as individual actuaries use in terms of having that wider societal context so that we genuinely fulfill our public interest obligations. I think our insight into demographic risk is of value to wider society and the corresponding public debate on some of these issues. And we know at the moment there are lots of debates around demographic risk in terms of mortality improvement, aging, care, et cetera, et cetera. And the profession can provide input into that, and we believe we should be doing more of that, and that's one of the things we want the MRSC to do. So, based on these principles, we've identified these six priorities, and I've sort of shown them in what is priority, and hopefully by a descending font. Thank you, Matthew, for that suggestion. And so you probably can't read the last one, but these are what we think are the top are the six priorities. And what I want to do is sort of go through these, and I'll probably spend more time at the top and less time at the bottom, and hopefully, you know, not keep you from your beer too much longer than we have to, and leave us with enough time for questions. So our first priority concerns predicting future population mortality improvement, and I do mean predicting. The CMI projection model is recognised worldwide as being an excellent model to create projections, but it does not provide a prediction of future mortality improvement, and that's deliberate. The CMI do not want to provide guidance on how to create a prediction of population mortality improvement. They want to leave that. They are there to provide the data, to provide the model, but then it's over to you. Their focus, as Matthew was saying, being on data and models, is what limits them potentially from creating that prediction. A prediction of mortality improvement requires an allowance for those past events that aren't yet coming through the data, and those future events which will come to affect the data. And that is sort of the area where the MRC wants to play. And we want to see a methodology created which does that. Now, this is going to be quite a challenging piece, and it is ambitious. We're going to need data and models that are better capturing the specific effects of risk factors on mortality. We're going to need to find a way of stratifying information and expert opinion regarding these non-observed events. And we're going to have to find a way to bring this all together to actually create a prediction. So I'm not going to delve into the details too much, but I think you can sort of understand it. But the one thing I do want to highlight is this last point. It's possibly the most important aspect is this communication. It is essential that in this methodology, that the interpretation, that it is clear how the interpretation assumptions affect the resulting opinion. We do not want this to be a black box. So whatever the resulting method is, it must provide a clear and transparent linkage between the assumptions and the resulting prediction, such that you as the users and other users as well can understand why the prediction is what it is. And indeed, modify it to be in line with your own views if you wish. Now, quite what the output of this piece of work is still to be determined. Should we, as the MRC, be producing a best prediction of on behalf of the committee and on behalf of the profession, similar to what the ONS does? And so, as such, present the profession as the experts in this area? I mean, I think we are. I don't think we say it often enough. Or should we go down a slightly different route, and should we create a set of predictions based upon different interpretation assumptions that then people who are absorbing the content can decide for themselves what they want to do? I think there's some political questions that we as the committee and the profession at large need to decide on in terms of which way we go. But I think also it's going to depend on quite what the methodology is. Does it create a level of certainty? Is it accurate enough that our best prediction is in any way valid? Or does, as we get through the piece of work, does it become clear that actually we would be far more sensible? So there's some technical reasons and some political reasons as to which way we're going to go. So this should be quite an interesting piece of work and quite challenging and a game changer. Our second priority relates to morbidity. Over the last 20 years of profession, we've seen significant focus on mortality and longevity, and we have made significant progress from the days of a single base table by age and gender. However, our focus and understanding of morbidity has probably not developed at the same rate. In addition, the patterns of morbidity are changing and are becoming more challenging and complex. For example, we're seeing an increasing prevalence of diabetes, but what's the effect on people's lifestyle, and what's the variation between lives? There's an increasing number of people who are now surviving cancer. It's not the killer it used to be, but what does that mean for those survivors? Are they basically healthy, or are they in some elevated morbid state, and how does it vary? And the number of people living with comorbidities is increasing. And as a result, they're taking many multiple forms of medication. What's the effect of this polypharmacy? So there's a number of questions and areas like this that we want to explore. And what we hope is through this work is we can enhance the general understanding of morbidity such that we as a profession can better meet the needs of our clients and customers. When we were originally discussing this work, I was personally thinking that this might be a sort of morbidity in the 21st century, so akin to the longevity paper of many moons ago. But Charles, who's sort of leading this piece of work for us, has been doing some great thinking to sort of consider whether the scope should actually be wider so to make sure we're delivering value. So going beyond just an analysis paper to bring to the profession a better understanding of what data is out there, what models could be used, what analysis is potentially possible, and what expert opinion exists out there, and how can it be taken into account. So this widening of scope means that we are taking quite a bit of time to really understand the needs of our stakeholders. We want to make sure we produce the right scope. And so we're discussing this with a number of parties. And then, as the slide suggests, as we get into the work, we're going to refine the scope to make sure that by the time we actually publish the work, it remains relevant and interesting. It isn't just something we said in 2019 and in 2024, it just gets put on a shelf and thanks very much, we'll move on. And so to care. The challenge of long-term care is one of the most critical issues facing the UK. I mean, longevity is a benefit, but this is one of the areas where we need to deal with the consequences. An increasing number of lives will require at the oldest ages, and the funding of this care is not keeping pace with the demand. I mean, the door's closed, so I can say this. If we were to summarise the government's efforts in recent years in this area, we would probably use words such as can, road, ball, and long rest. More needs to be done. Now, it is not the role of the MHSC to do this in isolation. We're not going to solve the care problem. You know, thank God I'm in this sweat brow. But we can support the profession, and the profession can support society at large to resolve this challenge. The problem of care, in some sense, is quite a traditional actuarial problem, in that what we need as a society is some form of sustainable, attractive funding model that meets the uncertain and expensive liability. The MRSC has a number of people who are experts in this area, and we think we can do something to bring our expertise in other areas to this particular problem. What we're doing at the moment, before we get into this, is we're discussing with the other parts of the profession, the other boards, et cetera, what they're doing, what they're considering, to try and determine what we need to be done, what they need from us. So once we've completed that consultation, our plans will become clearer. But in the meantime, if you have any thoughts, I'd like to hear them. And at the end of the session, please, genuinely, we had, as Matthew says, a good session last week, and certain ideas about came out of that, you know, certain, you know, sort of fresh perspectives, and we'd like to hear yours. This next priority is one close to my heart. As some of you probably know, longevity risk, you know, is something I've pined on quite interested in. Myself and Stephen are both looking at this one quite a lot. The management of longevity risk has evolved over the last 20 years, but it's still very much in its infancy. We still do not have an industry standard definition of the components of longevity risk behaviours, which we as actuaries and the industries we work in can use as a reference point. Often the management of longevity risk can be summed up as price it right or reinsure it. You know, surely we can do more than that. And in terms of understanding, sometimes we don't appreciate how much of the risk is emerging out of the actuarial techniques we're using rather than the intrinsic risk of the lives that are being underwritten. So we want to help address this issue. We want to explore three specific areas. We want to create said industry standard definition. And the particular challenges we see are that different actuaries use different words to say the same, to mean the same thing, or use the same word to use different things. This makes it quite hard for us to validate our risk models and indeed benchmark the results. Even with a standard definition, we would expect that different companies will create different, slightly different definitions they use for themselves that reflect their particular risk profile. Therefore, if we're talking about trying to benchmark the metrics, the results that those models produce, we want to create a way that those results can be brought together in line with the standard definition so that the results are comparable. We think this will help with benchmarking. And so what we're going to do is create some form of translation method which does that. And lastly, we want to use the standard definition of risk behaviours to explore new ways of managing longevity risk. The cost of longevity protection is very expensive for customers at the moment. We hope that these endeavours can help find new ways to reduce this cost and encourage people to get the protection they need as they're living longer. So, the methods we use to analyse portfolio experience have evolved drastically over recent years. And we should expect this evolution to continue with new techniques and new data sources emerging. We want to take stock of the situation and analyse what is currently best practice and what will potentially be best practice in the future. But one aspect we want to specifically focus our attention on are the assumptions that underpin these techniques. There are implicitly certain assumptions that are being made, and perhaps without the appreciation of whether these assumptions are sufficiently true that the techniques can produce reliable results. Two examples of this that often feature in all these techniques are the assumptions about homogeneity and selection. These, if not true, can drastically influence the relevance and independence assumptions made in these techniques. So we're going to do quite a lot of work on this, but this is one of our lower priorities. And we're not expecting to define the scope of this until next year, and some of the higher priorities are done. But so this is potentially a sizable piece of work, and possibly one of the more technically interesting ones. And lastly, communication. Now, whilst this is our lowest priority, in some sense, communication is the most crucial challenge we face. The management of demographic risks is becoming increasingly complex beyond the capacity of our senior stakeholders to fully engage with the underlying detail. Our key role as actuaries, rather than working with the data and the models, is to communicate those results and the uncertainties and the ways that ensure that the key issues and judgments are understood. For example, we often rely upon metrics such as expectations of life and use them as a form of current currency. And when mortality variation was thought to be a simple percentage of base, this worked okay. However, with the increasing number of vectors affecting mortality, life expectancies don't necessarily move with either the change being made to the assumptions or the resulting liability move. As a consequence, we often spend as much time explaining the life expectancy movement as the thing we're actually proposing, which is unhelpful. We want to consider what alternative metrics are potentially available which behave more consistently with the analysis and behaviours that underpin it, and we're going to commission some research to look into this, and hopefully they'll come back with some suggestions. Okay. So I've given you, hopefully, some sense of what the what is. I'm now going to talk a little bit about the how and the when. The timeline should be viewed indicatively. Certain of the priorities will move faster than others, but broadly we're looking at a three-year programme. Our current focus, as my bright yellow arrow highlights, is in the sort of consultation and scope definition phase. As members, we have set up, as part of the MRC, various subcommittees to look at the definition, the scope definition for each of those, and that's kind of work in progress. But we're talking to a range of stakeholders about these priorities. Within the profession, those are the boards and the committees. But as Matthew highlighted, we gather together the heads of longevity, mortality, and morbidity, which is a generic way of saying sort of the senior people within each sort of company, reinsurer, consultancy, et cetera, who deal with Sarah to get their impressions of what we're proposing, get their feedback, and get their ideas. And we did have some, but we will hopefully publish some of the insight there, what we just gathered together, but it was a really good session. And let's be honest about it, we're talking to you tonight. We're hoping to hear your thoughts, which you can obviously raise via the questions. Questions probably not being the right word. The afterwards, or via email. I think I have mistakenly put my email address at the end of this. Please do not abuse it. Once we've sort of nailed down the scope, we'll move into the commissioning phase. Now, we're expecting this work to be done by a mixture of actuaries and academics. The academics will engage via the ARC, and we're going to be holding a sort of similar discussion forum with various academics in the new year. In terms of the work done by the actuaries, it'll either be done by the working parties or by various subcommittees of the MRC. And I would highlight, these subcommittees of the MRC don't necessarily need to be made up of members of the MRC. They're just a sort of way of collecting the sort of and just defining where the work's been done. And so once we've got everything up and running, this is simply the simple task of doing the research and development, some review and refinement, and publishing it. Easy, no problem. Okay. The crucial bit, the sales pitch. How do you get involved? And given the sort of scale and ambition of what we're trying to achieve, there's quite a lot of ways for you to get involved. Matthew mentioned the member interest group. This hasn't yet been created, but it's in the process of doing so. It should appear on the profession's website shortly, so keep an eye out for that. And there are four sort of purposes we want the member interest group to achieve. We want to use it to link together the community of actuaries who are, their careers are focused on the management of demographic risks. Most actuaries are probably well served by the traditional distinctions of life, pensions, and GI. But for those of us working in demographic risks, our interests probably cut across this, and we think it'd be useful for you to be able to sort of interact with people working in these different disciplines who can bring different perspectives. GI actuaries, life actuaries, and pensions actuaries tackle these problems in quite different ways and bring different techniques. There are things we can learn from each other. Secondly, we want to use it to communicate with you. So this is how we're going to publish information about how we're doing, what decisions are made, et cetera, et cetera. So this is going to be our primary communication channel. We want it to serve as a discussion forum. We want you to be able to use this to contribute ideas electronically. And if we have any opportunities for people to get involved, we'll publish them via the member interest group. One thing to say, the MIG is Dan Ryan's baby. So if you are interested involved in making this work, please get in touch with Dan. I'm sure he'll appreciate the support. There are two specific opportunities I want to bring to your attention. Firstly is an assistant editor of the bulletin. We need someone to support Matthew in making sure that this delivers. There are a lot of pieces of work that need to be done to make it happen, and it's probably too much for the support level we're getting from the profession, so we need a bit of help. An understanding of demographic risk is probably a little bit useful, but we're not looking for an expert. We're really looking for someone who's got the sort of energy and momentum to make this happen. If you're potentially interested in this role, please can you talk to Matthew? The second opportunity is to someone to provide assistance to the members of the MRSC. Now, I did debate trying to put a better description up there that was slightly more flattering. But in the end, I thought, look, I'm going to be honest with you. What we need is someone to sort of pick up some stuff. We need someone who can pick up some of the actions from the committee and do some of the ad hoc analysis. One of the benefits of our committee is that we have some of the leading thinkers in the area on the committee. The downside of that is they're all very busy. So what we need is someone slightly more junior who can come along and help us. Now, the benefit of this is that if you take up this opportunity, that you'll get to attend the MRSC, so you'll hear our thoughts and debates firsthand and know what's going on, and you'll also be able to gain access and exposure to the people on the MRSC, which I think probably worth your time. Have I sold that at all well? I don't think so. But we'll make it worth your while somehow. Okay, so to sum up, the MRSC plays a very important role. We're trying to push back the boundaries of the methods and techniques we use to manage demographic risk, and through that, enhance the reputation of the profession in this area. Our research priorities are ambitious. We are looking to seek to make significant steps on the road to creating more scientific methods for managing demographic risk. And lastly, I think I may have mentioned this a couple of times, is we're looking for you guys to get involved. One final thought on this. I've tried to outline what we think and how I think you can get involved. But you may have different ideas or can see different ways to get involved. I invite you to come and challenge our suppositions. Okay, I'd like to thank you very much for listening. Hopefully it's been at the right pace. We've given you a good overview about dwelling. And I hope I've got more than one person who's excited about the opportunities we've got. You're not going anywhere. Before we take questions, and obviously I've got Charles and Stephen here, as well as myself and Matthew, to take questions so you can hear different perspectives from the MRSC, I'd like to again express my thanks to SIAS for allowing us to talk to you tonight. Our focus tonight has been about giving you an introduction, but hopefully we can come back in a year's time and tell you how we're doing with the on progressing some of these. And with that, I'll hand over to the chair.
So we've got Ruluka over here with a microphone, and Kishan, did you have a microphone as well? Yeah. So if you just raise your hand, and as I said, if you could state your name and if you're a fellow or a student.
Hi, Thank you very much. Just to kick off, my name is David Simmons. I thought really for the working party, when it has those six priorities, I think it was, to also think about the linkages between them. So more longevity is likely to generate more morbidity, and the increased challenge of care when old or infirm. So these things don't really stand in isolation. I also think there's a communication element in twofold. We often hear in the media very various stats about people in this part of the country or people in that part of the country have a life expectancy however many years longer or shorter than the other group. And I never really hear those stats really backed up. But I also more think that people always see it as actually bad. So this poor group is suffering because they have a life expectancy how many years shorter. Actually, what is not communicated is that the longer you live, actually, the more horrible things you've got a chance of getting. And so there is this kind of balance. You know, it's not always a one-way thing. And my final comment is that your first priority was about predicting improvements. There's an assumption that human mortality will always improve. I think human mortality will always change over time, but it won't always improve necessarily. Thank you.
So this is really a comment and maybe a question, but so it's Julian Stevenson, I'm a fellow, but Willetts was very dominant in this area as an author, and I just wondered if you thought anyone else, other than yourselves, of course, has displaced him. I'm not just talking about the Willetts model, and Willetts, who was publishing since 1999, was very dominant in this area, publishing about the modelling of longevity. And I was wondering if you thought any other authors had displaced him or had built on his work.
So do you mean Richard Willetts?
Yes. You know, just like who else in this space do you think is dominating the... I appreciate my knowledge is very out of date. But
I mean, we're great.
Yeah, no, I did say apart from yourselves, of course, but...
I think you made a really great point there, because obviously Richard's work back almost two decades ago now, we started here in Staple Inn, drawing attention to things such like the cohort effect. And I think we alluded to it with the Morbidity in the 21st Century paper, that we had in the early part of this millennium a fairly seminal body of research by Richard Willetts, Stephen Richards, and a number of others who at various points have been represented on the MRSC. But we've probably had a period of probably a good decade now without the same sort of impact papers coming out. Your prize-winning paper, Side Sasha. When we were setting those six priorities, was understanding that actually there's probably a deficit built up in terms of some of the big issues and having that body of work. And that's what we're looking to address. So whilst it doesn't say, So whilst I pointed probably a period of research around the time that people built on Richard's work, we're probably looking to create that next body of work at the moment through these six priorities. And certainly if there's anything you would like to suggest we built on from that earlier work, we'd love to hear it.
It's a good comment, so thanks very much for that. I mean, just to note, I don't think his name has appeared in the slides, which is slightly sort of retrograde of us, which is probably the wrong word, but within the MRSC we have a sort of group of people looking currently at the modelling of future mortality variations, and thank you for pointing out this is a somewhat sort of begging the question to always talk about future mortality improvements. I was quite keen to try and broaden it to future mortality variations. But within that, well, that group is me, Sasha, Dan Ryan, and also Richard Willett. So he's very much sort of contributing there. And part of the aim is, as Stephen was saying, there has been a bit of a deficit. So I'm trying to sort of remedy that in terms of sort of trying to be more predictive. But obviously, to the extent that the CMI has been doing all the good mortality projection committee work, that you know, that side of things has been steadily doing well and prospering in its own right on the CMI side.
Hi, Mark Wigan, Phil. There's a lot of output you're hoping for from the 3-year period of research, whatever, but some of it will be more useful to some companies than others. Thinking of, say, how to calibrate the CMI model. But if you come up with a kind of common approach or common risk language, how do you, or have you thought as far ahead as to ensure that it's embedded within the industry and that it is well used by everyone? And some companies don't just go up and say, I'm going to ignore everything that's been done and stick to our own language.
I'll have a first stab and let Sasha come in with the extra remarks. With the thank you for that comment. I absolutely agree that different work strands will appeal to different people in the industry, and some will have more relevance and more across the board, and some will be more specialised. With the risk taxonomy strand, we're very, very conscious that organisations at the moment have a wide variety of approaches, for example, to setting longevity projections, but we have a common language to be able to talk without releasing trade secrets. So we can talk about strength of assumptions for the CMI framework without, and that's fine, it's a common parlance and we understand each other. We haven't got to go into details of how we've formed our view and what trade secrets we've got about how that might evolve over time. The aspiration with that work strand is to create a similar kind of parlance in the aid of risk, in the area of risk taxonomy. Every organisation I'm aware of that has to, every insurance company I'm aware of that has longevity risk reserving internal model style work uses a different taxonomy, and as Sasha said, they use often the same words used to mean multiple things or multiple words to use the same thing, which means any two actuaries getting together can't actually have a conversation about their model without disclosing trade secrets. They haven't got common parlance. Equally, there isn't a common parlance to be able to talk with regulators and regulatory bodies around to understand what different organisations mean and where different organisations are perhaps putting more strength in their models and less strength in their models because they have a different definition. So it's certainly not to straitjacket people in terms of having a single way in which you will do your work, but it is designed to provide a communication tool. In that sense, we think it will be helpful because it will broaden out across not just the companies that already have to think about this and understanding of what drives longevity risk, but the industry more generally. To understand why it is that projections might not work out and actually how big is that risk. And that certainly, for example, would help the pensions industry as much as it would help the life industry. But Sasha, if I missed anything there.
No, I think that's a perfect answer. Can I just... You're eligible for the bottle of champagne, aren't you, in terms of membership?
And you're going to share it with us?
Jack Carmichael, student. I just thought, yeah, the talk was really interesting. I think there's a lot of value in the future improvements for the CMI model, in particular because, yeah, the CMI model doesn't really do the future stuff very well at the moment. So some kind of analysis in that I think would be really interesting. Sorry. I am aware that a couple of years ago, I think the PLSA and Club Vita did some very similar research where they looked at the CMI model and did sort of scenario testing for back to the 50s, cures for cancer, and what that would do for future improvements. So I guess my question is, how is the MOSC research going to differentiate itself from that? And could potentially kind of stochastic modelling feature in this research as well?
I think I'll let Mr. Club Vita answer that question.
Thank you, Sasha. So I think that body of work there was probably, it was something that was, at the time, was designed to start the debate around socioeconomic differences, creating some scenarios and helping pension plans and insurers potentially think through some of the different outcomes that might exist or that could pan out in terms of future projections. The key thing with that perhaps distinguishes that research is it was not designed to have any central view. It was just putting out, at the time, half a dozen scenarios and allowing the user to place their own opinion on them. I think the projections part of this is designed to be focusing a little bit more on the center part of that spectrum to understand what might, where some of the aspects such as the thorny issue of how do you calibrate long-term rate in the CMI model, how you might address that. So it's looking at it from a different lens of more the center part of distribution rather than a spread of scenarios and stress testing.
So give you the answer you're looking for.
No more questions?
Guy Horton, a fellow last time I looked. I was looking at some statistics the other day and someone was suggesting that female mortality for the UK had moved towards the lower quartile of some other developed countries. And they were talking about, is there a missing link here? And something that intrigued me, that I've worked in some countries where migration is not an issue, and I've worked in others where it is. And the UK, once upon a time, perhaps had a lower rate of emigration and immigration. It's probably gone up and down over several hundred years. But in the current world, where you have quite a lot of older people migrating out to other parts of the world, and you get migration in at a different sort of demographic level. How does all that come through, and does that play into any of this, that it's sort of not explicitly mentioned in many places? How does that get considered, and is there any way to handle it, given data seems to be very difficult to find, that's solid, yet obviously they're at different age groups that different things are happening?
As the chair, I think in the absence of someone sticking their hand up, I think I've got to take this one. I think the basic answer is challenging. I mean, our death statistics are reasonably accurate if someone dies in the UK. But those people who are currently overseas, you know, got to retirement age and decided sunnier climes were for them, if they die there, they don't necessarily get captured. But deaths is actually pretty good. Probably the bigger issue is on the population side, in the sense that when it's accurate, it's based off the census, which has its issues, and between censi, it is modelled. And quite what's happened in terms of migration isn't probably captured that well. We know there are issues with the population data. I mean, we saw it when we got to the 2011 census, but the population projection that had been running over the noughties was quite a long way off and was distorting mortality statistics. It is, dare I say, quite possible that these kind of issues will keep happening, and migration may be one of the sources. The general impression I get from sort of some of the thinking at the ONS is that it is reasonably low in the retirement population, but I'm not sure whether that's sort of historical. I think there has been an increased tendency of sunnier climb finding at retirement, and then people disappear for their early part of the retirement, and as they get older and their health starts to fail, rightly or wrongly, they view the NHS and the UK health system as the place to be and come back. Potentially, as the population ages and, you know, those migrating factors come in, it might need to be considered more, but I think that's a long-winded way of saying there's more that could be done there.
Craig Gillespie, a fellow, and I was just curious to know, in terms of forecasting mortality, what detail you go into in terms of mortality causes. I remember in the late 1980s, the Institute produced several forecasts looking at the impact of AIDS on mortality. You mentioned the opioid epidemic in the US. Mental health is another one, which is where we're seeing changes. Is that somewhere, do you talk to industry experts or medical experts in different areas and consider how that might impact on mortality forecasts.
Yeah, go for it.
Yeah. It's a good question. So just what I'm about to say isn't by way of evading that, but it sort of tries to answer, and I can sort of re-answer later in, if you're staying for drinks. But we're at the sort of stage now of considering the various different sort of basic ways we can go down the road for this work stream, whether it's sort of cause of death or some sort of multi-state model, and whether it's one of those, whether it's using public domain data, we're going to get richer data. And then for some of the underlying assumptions, how we can go about getting those. So that's a bit, probably a bit vaguer an answer than you're expecting. So one way it could go, I don't want to be sort of leading things here, but I mean, if the way combined existed just to me, it would be some sort of driver-based model where you look at drivers such as obesity and smoking and so on, and then you sort of work through the impact of those on the main causes of death, such as cancer and heart disease and ingrowing toenail and so on. And then, so that's a sort of nice framework which we should then sort of users can play about reasonably. But then there's another question whether we want to try and get a panel of medical experts or ONS type people together and try and think through what are sensible projections for something like smoking or obesity. On the other hand, for things like that, which is so central, they sort of keep getting looked at repeatedly by various public health England bodies and other sort of similar bodies. So, in a sense, if we have fairly broad common drivers, there's already going to be a lot of probably semi-respectable opinion out there. So I'm sort of probably answering half your question and so on, but hopefully that gives you a feel for the fact that the answers may be. So one interesting thing we didn't put anything up on the slides was this whole aspect of sort of international perspective and international questions, and it's been interesting sort of having the different aspects or what's the word, perspectives of the CMI and the MRLC, because with the CMI when we have these conversations our subscribers are our clients, and so we also try to make sure we're sort of delivering value to them, whereas for the IFOA effectively our customers are effectively the fellows spread all over the world. So it's interesting to get anyone's opinions as to whether we should be, whether what we've seen so far feels too UK-focused, or whether there's any way we should be doing something more international. So if anyone's sort of desperate to have another stab at some champagne, that might be an interesting area for a question.
Okay. If not, then I suppose it's just award the prizes then. So I think for the fellow, we'll give it to Mark, and the one student, we'll give it to Jack. Yeah, and just a quick few reminders before we close. Just a reminder to complete the online survey, which will be sent around after the talk. And a reminder that, of course, you're welcome to attend our networking drinks in the hall. So just a thank you to the audience for your participation, and a big thank you to our speakers this evening. And if we could just thank them in the normal way. If you want to come and collect your champagne.
So in the previous stakeholder event came out as a peer interest
organisation.
Still seems to be. It's one forum, right? I wonder what the best way to get wider feedback is from some events.
Is that good?
Capture excellent. A small fraction of our global.
Yeah, pretty good. I suddenly looked at my clock and I thought, the questions are winding down.